Big D Entertainment, in association with Dipsy Doodle Productions, presents The Dave Holly Hour, brought to you by TJS Ceramic Studio, Serendipity Studio Gallery and Gifts, Chasers Food and Spirits, XL Chiropractic, Quality Nails, Jesse Moffitt Entertainment, and the Sioux Falls Arts Council. The Dave Holly Hour features Sioux Empire Arts and Entertainment Conversations. A true lover of arts, entertainment, good food, and fun times, including an occasional Jack Daniels. Okay, so a few Jack Daniels. Here he is, Dave Holly.
First-timers, long-timers, great to have you along for the fun. This week's fun includes learning more about theatrical lighting from Matt Cook. Listen to what he compares lighting design to. Then we get the details on Monstrous Little Theater's production of Love and Information from director Jeff Larson and actor Emily Wilson. The show runs April 25th through the 27th. But first, let's pop the cork on this bubbly little show. Time to grab your favorite beverage, lift it high, and toast it to being Thursday, a.k.a. Weekend Eve.
Hey, the weekend isn't around the corner, it's here!
So long, hump day and your frumpy way. We say hello to Thursdays with opening nights. The weekend is near and we can see the bright lights. Yes, Thursday, you're so hearty, we can't wait for Friday, so a day early, we start the party. Whatever you're drinking and whatever you're drinking it out of might very well be determined by where and when you're listening. My choice, as per usual, is my usual, a Jasper Newton. It's Jack Daniels, Diet Coke with a lime. For you, whether it's a cup of coffee, a spot of tea, glass of milk, bottle of water, mug of beer, cocktail, glass of wine, or a flute of champagne, lift it high and toast to that lovable guy that voices the open and close to this show, Zach Dresch. But today we toast Zach for being the local last comic standing. Last Friday, he won that. Congratulations. Love you, buddy. You are my friend, and I appreciate you so much for everything you do. Cheers to you, Zach Dresch. Speaking of cheers, which just happens to rhyme with beers, say cheers with a beer or your favorite cocktail at Chasers, West 12th Street and Ellis Road. Make sure you grab some food while you're at it. Join me on Monday nights for Dave Holly Hour Trivia, starting at 7. We don't have a theme yet for Monday, so pay attention to the Dave Holly Hour Facebook page. We'll post it there, which makes it also pop up on Instagram.
Honorable mention.
What over the past week made Dave laugh, guffaw, chuckle, chortle, giggle, smile, or maybe even shed a tear of joy? Premier Playhouse's version of Oklahoma was not just O-K-L-A-H-O-M-A, it was G-R-E-A-T. Thoroughly enjoyed the production on opening night. Didn't have time to greet the cast afterward. Time-wise was a situation. And the number of people I knew that were in the cast, so I still need to get some Bravo messages out there. If you missed it last weekend, not to fear, it runs this weekend as well, and I highly recommend it. Later, we talk with Monstrous Little Theater director Jeff Larson and actor Emily Wilson. In just a few minutes, we learn more about stage lighting with Matt Cook on the Dave Holly Hour. Take in the great works at Serendipity Studio and Gift Gallery in the Shriver Building. So many great works for regional artists. They offer so many ways for everyone to participate or interact with the studio, as well as the artists. In fact, check your calendar, make your plans to participate at Serendipity Studio. Visit their website, serendipitystudiosd.com. Again, serendipitystudiosd.com. For more information, or to register for any of their activities. In fact, double the fun this Saturday at Serendipity with a rose mailing class in the morning at 9 o'clock and a guided paint class at 1 in the afternoon. Serendipity Studio, located downtown Sioux Falls in the historic Shriver Building at 230 South Phillips Avenue on the second floor.
Check out the new ceramic studio in Sioux Falls. Conveniently located off Kiwanis Avenue on 5th Street. TJS Ceramics. Inside Oscar's Mini Storage. We have thousands of classic vintage ceramic mold items and several new items too. TJS Ceramics offers classes, special open studio nights, and completed ready-to-purchase items. Bisque, studio time, or painting parties are available. Visit TJS Ceramics Studio in person today or email tjsceramics@gmail.com for more details.
Are you an artist? Need some funding to further your art? There's a great opportunity for you through a Sioux Falls Arts Council program. The Artist Microgrant Program gives away several microgrants to local artists, no matter what art discipline you're in. Unlike more traditional grants, a microgrant is very easy to apply for. Go to artssiouxfalls.org. If you haven't done so yet, create a listing on the artist directory, which is beneficial in its own way. Then go to the Artist Microgrants page and apply online. The process is simple. Find out more about the Sioux Falls Arts Council as well online at artssiouxfalls.org.
It's the podcast that creatives in the Sioux Empire listen to so they can learn more about other creatives. It's the Dave Holly Hour.
Welcome back, everybody. Yep, gonna say it. Have to. It's in my contract. All $48 a month that I make on this show. I must say, it's always a pleasure to talk Sioux Empire arts and entertainment. And always a pleasure to get a new guest on the show as well. And today, we get to talk lighting and design and so forth. Matt Cook, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Glad to have you on the show finally. It's taken a while.
It has.
Yeah, but it's good to see you and good to have you on here. And I caught you in between things.
Yes, you did.
You've got a busy, busy month ahead,
yes.
If not longer.
Yes, so right now is when all the spring productions are, mm-hmm. between collegiate and the local productions. Everybody's doing their spring shows. So I'm hopping back and forth between University of Sioux Falls, mm-hmm. with Big Fish, Goodnight Theater Collective. I do lighting for a local dance studio, Ballerina Dance Studios. So I am in tech week for the next month.
Tech month for you then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you enjoy about it though?
It's for me, lighting I describe as the water in a fish tank.
Oh.
Like without that. It's nothing. Like but you need it.
Right.
If the lighting is good, it's like the water is clean and it makes everything else shine, yeah. and it brings out about the magic versus like if the lighting is gone, one, everything looks terrible. And two, if it's dirty, it hides everything else.
Yeah.
So if it's good, if it's clean, if it's fun, you're never going to notice it. So lighting to me was kind of something I fell into. I did not start in lighting. I went to Augustana and spent a lot of my time there in the costume shop and scene shop,
mm-hmm.
A little bit of lighting, but it was really after college when I started getting into working at the Washington Pavilion that I started finding electrics, and they're like, hey, you're good at this. Keep going. And then I was stolen from wardrobe for forever and worked in electrics and continued to learn lighting and learn about design,
uh-huh.
Kind of as I went, fake it till you make it.
Exactly. What about audio?
Audio for me.
Audio engineering at all?
I do a little bit of audio, mm-hmm. engineering here in town. I'm the worship technology coordinator for First Presbyterian.
Oh, instead of an IT, you're a WT, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
WTC.
WTC, yeah.
Different WTC than, yeah. you know.
I was just going to say, I know that acronym.
Uh-huh, yep. That one, we stopped using that one 22 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. 23 years now. I run AV for First Presbyterian,
okay.
between the soundboard, projectors, media slides. That's all me as well.
All right. So
streaming.
Was this part at your church, was this one of those cases of, hey, this kid does tech stuff. Let's get him.
No. So the story behind that was I was working. I just come on full time at the Pavilion, and the audio guy at the time was getting married, moving out to Rapid City, and said, hey, Matt, are you interested in a gig? And I said, sure. And he said, well, come on by First Pres and see what you think. So I started there and it was like, okay, yeah, I can do this. Just unmute the soundboard. And 10 years later, I'm still there.
Oh, what I love about that story is, you know, we hear so often of somebody starting so early the reason I ask that question is because so many people get wrangled in once somebody finds out you have a particular skill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's good to know that you were actually just able to go through and to take over something and go, yeah, I'll do that.
Sure. And then also Google is your friend.
True.
How do I?
Oh, and YouTube, then,
YouTube,
of course.
Yes. How do I? Like, because, you know, why read instruction manuals when you could just watch YouTube videos?
Yeah, get a 6-minute video and you're set to go.
Yep, I'm a pro now, obviously. Yeah. I know exactly what I'm doing all the time. Never make any mistakes. Never. Perfect.
So you started doing this at the Pavilion then?
Yes.
All right. So
backing up to that, my first gig out of college, I spent a summer at the Black Hills Playhouse.
Oh, wonderful. My niece was there last year.
It's a fantastic place. I miss it dearly. And then the following fall, they were like, hey, we need people for Dakota Players. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't got nothing going on. So I applied and they're like, cool, you're in. I was like, great. We toured some new shows, actually. One was written by some local playwrights called X's for Zebra,
mm-hmm.
about a zebra named Zena, spelled with an X.
Yeah.
And she has no stripes.
Oh.
And the other show I toured with Dakota Players was called Space School Musical. And so I can say I worked with NASA. And we developed that play and toured both of those to all the little tiny towns in South Dakota that nobody's ever heard of. Lemon has a fantastic city park, by the way. If you ever get up to Northwest South Dakota, it's all petrified wood.
That's a trek.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And actually the border with North Dakota is the rail, the train tracks. If you cross the train tracks, you cross state lines.
Amazing.
And
we're going to talk some travel later on with you too, because you have a very interesting story, but let's stick right now.
Yes.
With
so this. My lighting thing started, we had 8 par cans on 2 sticks and 16 cues because we just had a preset fader board that was run by an elementary school student.
Right.
But
DMX at this point, was it?
Just a little bit, but nothing fancy. Everything's just like either on or off, nothing crazy. And I was in the middle of South Dakota, said I'm bored a little bit, so I might have tweaked the lights a little bit along the way. And then that's kind of where maybe the first ones. I did one student production in college. It was terrible. I call it pretentious. It was bad.
Did you get an A for it though, regardless?
No.
Oh,
it wasn't a class. It wasn't a project. This was just a student production. I actually asked to, like, hey, I kind of am enjoying this. Could I do lights for a main stage show? And they told me no. I was like, okay. So then I started back at the Pavilion and electrics, and that's when it really started, because I was setting up Broadway. I was running local high school concerts, symphony concerts. I was kind of one of the go-to guys for the symphony at the time for on tech. Everything. And then I got my first kind of design gig through that was a different dance studio here in town. They were like, hey, we need a designer. And I said, cool, I'll do it. And I literally went home and Googled how to light dance, because I didn't have a clue. And I found this article. I can't find it anymore. It was by a professor from NSU in Aberdeen. And it talked about all the different lighting positions. In lighting, we talk about high sides, mid sides, low sides, shins, all these different lighting positions. And I was like, this is great. So then I walked into the first kind of meeting with the studio owner, and it's like, oh, I know lingo now. And just from there, I've just kept lighting and doing, finding more and more of a home in electrics.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when you talk about lighting. I love that analogy that you had that, you know, it's like the water in a fishbowl. Because when I was in college at Southwest Minnesota State and was taking radio and television and a little bit of theater, when it came to our TV productions and they'd get critiqued and the whole class would take a look at it and so forth. And then the professor would ask you, whoever, you know, produced it, said, what would you do differently? And every single one of us always knew the correct answer was to say more lights.
Lighting for film and camera is a pain. That's not my favorite.
Well, is it a pain to do a Broadway show, though? I mean,
what do you have to hang and everything? Well, you're hanging in Broadway, you might be hanging upwards of 100 lights. Mm-hmm.
And how
120,
high?
120. Usually trim heights are 30 feet in the air. A lot of times, depending on what you're doing, there's ways to compensate for the fact that you're not in a lift or something 30 feet in the air, especially now with new technology, moving lights, LEDs.
True.
You don't have to make up your mind ahead of time. You can just sit at your little lighting board and go, oh, move it to the left, move it to the right, done. As opposed to getting out a ladder or a lift and going out and tweaking it. Or
has to be a huge time saver.
It's a huge time saver. Or at some theaters, you can't work with a lift or some other situation. So sometimes you have to do what's called bounce focus, where you literally bring the lights in and out, in and out, in and out, adjust them just a little bit every time, trying to get closer till eventually you're like, good enough. I teach over at USF and I tell my students at some point, ish is fine. Ish is fine. Move on.
All right. So let's talk about you being an instructor.
Mm-hmm.
The things that you've learned, and you admit that basically it was a lot of Googling.
Mm-hmm.
How do I?
Mm-hmm.
How do you pass that along at a collegiate level?
Yeah. So at USF, we have two main stage shows a year, and I kind of serve in two roles for that. I'm the designer, but we also have lab classes throughout the semester. So the labs currently at USF are lighting, costumes, sets, and paints, I believe, are our current labs. And so throughout the semester, our project is to basically build that semester's show. And so I teach a lot of hands-on. I call it the Miss Frizzle method, where it's just like, you know, get in there and see what happens. Ask me questions and go, what happens if I do this? I know the answer, but, you know, go try it.
Right.
Learn it like a science experiment almost. I know the answer, and I know you're probably not going to seriously injure yourself. Otherwise, I would stop you. But try it and see what happens. And did it do what you thought it was going to do? A big question I ask all the time is why? Why? Why do you think this is that way? Why? Because when you understand the why, you can play with it then.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to apply it to other situations. And we added lighting as a course. This is year two, because we were finding that the students were fantastic in some of the other elements, but when it came to electrics and stuff, they didn't know anything. 2020 happened. Oh, we got to make changes, do something different, because all of a sudden the students were doing more productions as like senior projects or student projects rather than just scene work.
Mm-hmm.
So it became more apparent that, hey, they need to have a broader range of technical knowledge. So I am available to them to ask questions, and then they just go and do. So some of them still Googling. I say, you know what? There's fantastic Facebook forums out there. Google is your friend. Read the, like, watch the videos, like, see what you can learn. And then I'm a big believer in watching things. So I go to a lot of shows here in town and I watch and I say, I like the idea. Mean Girls was just at the Pavilion, and there was a moment in Act Two. It was so cool, where Regina George is copying her burn book to distribute throughout the school to try to destroy Katie, who's destroyed her. And the light, there was just a bar of lights that came in LEDs, and all they did was run a line of white from left to right across this bar. And I was like, oh, it's so cool. It's so simple, but it's right. So perfectly encapsulates the scanner motion of a copier. And I'm like, stealing that idea. I'm a big proponent of, I call it cheesy effects with lighting. A show I saw years ago once at the Pavilion had a light focus just for the moment where he would kick on a curb, or I can't remember if it was the guy or the gal, kicked on a Kirby vacuum that basically served as a spotlight for the other character across the stage. And Natasha Katz was the designer of that one. She's a multi-Tony award-winning lighting designer. And she had a light focus just for that moment to kind of emulate the light of the vacuum cleaner. No way is, for those of you who know what a Kirby is, no way is that light bright enough to right. actually serve as a spotlight. But it was just this fun moment. And ever since then, I said, if Natasha Katz can get away with it, I can get away with it. So having fun with lights, doing cool ideas, watching things. And I encourage the students to like try it, see what works, see what doesn't work. And then when you do it, look back on it or come and ask me, hey, what'd you think? Because, you know, if people didn't do that for me, I wouldn't have learned. And I've been designing now for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I've gotten to do amazing projects, everything from, you know, 8 park hands on a stick to I've had work literally televised nationally on PBS when South Dakota Public Broadcasting came to the Pavilion and recorded some things for national distribution. So that range of productions has all sorts of different requirements, but at the same point, it's the same elements. It's the same elements we're doing on the collegiate level that touring Broadway is doing, that in like New York, London, these big theatrical houses are doing. It's all the same stuff. It's just on what scale and what budget you get to play.
When you were growing up, did you think that this would be something you'd be doing?
No, absolutely not. So looking back, the signs were there that Matt was perhaps kind of an artsy kid. I didn't do any sports. I did everything but sports. But I didn't do a lot of theater. I did a couple years of one act, maybe a high school play or two, but not a ton of theater. I actually thought in high school my home would be the sciences. So I went to Augie and started as a chemistry major. And quickly found that was not a home for me. I still love science.
Right.
But the nature of the coursework was work.
Yeah.
It was no fun. It was like all the fun is gone. And if there's no, if you're not finding any joy in it, why are you doing
exactly.
it?
Exactly. But you still use science.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, think of how far along from parkans to what we have today.
Oh,
for
my
lighting.
Goodness. And we all joked in high school, why do I need math? I'll never use math again.
Well, yeah.
And especially in the lighting world, we use a lot of practical math and sciences and physics. What I really enjoy about being a technician and a designer for me in lighting world, it's this great mix of both being analytical and scientific and figuring out the actual, like the mechanics of it. And then you also play artist through, well, what lights are we turning on when and what colors, and playing with patterns and shapes. With modern lighting technology, I've been able to really elevate, I feel, a lot of my designs and a lot of productions to emulate these big touring shows, these big Broadway shows. And having come from a background of like, we don't have budget, we don't have time, like I can make magic out of pretty much anything. But it's that's ingenuity. That isn't that what science is? Isn't that what engineering is? I may not have an engineering degree, but at the same point, I have to know all of these elements mm-hmm. and understand them so I don't injure myself. I don't injure actors, because they are placing a lot of implicit trust to me to hang things above their heads that weigh a lot and not injure anybody.
How do you start designing for a show?
So the first thing, I'm kind of weird. So it's like, I get the script, I might look through it, but at the same point, I like to see things. That's kind of So I will look through it loosely. I might start listening to the music. I love musicals and dance. For me, they all start with the music. What is the tone of the show? What is the music? Usually in production land, we'll have a meeting with our directors and they have concepts going, hey, I want to do this. So USF is doing Big Fish.
Mm-hmm.
And Alicia, in our initial production meeting, at the end of Act One, there's this big moment with the daffodils where he is proposing to her. And he sings all about daffodils. And she's like, I just want daffodils to be just the thing. And so all the design team takes that and goes, okay, now what? So our scenic charge and set builder, Brad and Jason, built this fantastic daffodil drop. And I'm taking lights and moving them all through the theater and these yellow dots that are just everything is daffodils. And it's just this powerful moment. So then I start with the script, the music, maybe a production meeting. And then lighting is strange, where a lot of the other production teams start their stuff like, you know, from that moment. Lighting for me, we kind of have to wait until everybody finishes what they're doing. So I want to know what the blocking is. I want to know what the set is. I want to know a lot of probably what the costumes are, because I have the power to take all that effort and go, no.
Right.
So I want to highlight. So I kind of have to wait. So I was describing it to a student the other day of lighting is wait, panic. Where we do oftentimes 6 weeks worth of work in 6 days because we're waiting till all these other elements are mostly done. And then we come in, watch it. I write a ton of notes in my script on blocking, on mood, on tone. And then I just get ideas in my head for colors. I love color. My design style is very colorful. There's a lot of patterns. There's a lot of bold colors. I'm also a believer that lighting shouldn't always also be the background. I look for moments when lighting can be more of
a focal.
Yeah. Some people describe it as sometimes my lights are their own character, where it's like, okay, we're gonna be bolder here. We're gonna have a moment, but then I, as the lighting person, have to realize you're not at a light show. I give you a moment, and then I take it away. And we go back to, because at the core of it, we're all trying to tell a story here.
Mm-hmm.
What does the story need? So I go back and forth of when lighting is a background element versus when it can become more of a foreground element. When listening to the music, like if it's a very, for like Sweeney Todd, there are moments where the music is really intense. And so in my head, I think of colors. What colors are intense? Reds, saturate purples, yellows. Those are the colors that come to my head, versus more ballad moments are perhaps still purple, but adding blues, maybe a little bit of a cyan or a teal kind of color. I, as a designer, have learned my color palette, and I don't use a ton of green or yellow. Except on daffodils. Okay. You go to USF. You ask any of the students around there, that seems this there's two the first thing they've learned is that Matt hates Roscoe 12. The brand is Roscoe. It's their color number 12. It's called Straw. And I think nothing looks good in it. It's a terrible color.
Mm-hmm.
It's this very like crayon yellow. The color is fine, but keep in mind, I'm looking at it not from like a crayon on a piece of paper. I'm looking at it as everything is bathed in this color. And I have found that skin tones look terrible in it. Costumes, terrible. Sets, terrible. Nothing looks good in this color, except I will have moments where I'm like, you know what this scene needs? It needs yellow. And even I will bend to my own dislikes.
Yeah.
So a few years
for the good of the show.
For the good of the show. Yeah. But so for example, a few years ago, USF did Heaven to Heaven, written by Austin Vanderzee here in Sioux Falls.
Yeah.
And we got to the we got to the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness, and the devil comes out, and I was like, okay, so we got to throw some colors in here. I don't want red because, you know, it's the devil, so everybody does red. But then I'm like, but then it all looks like Star Wars because it's red. It's Star Wars. So I was like, you know what? Fine. We're going to go with yellow. Yeah. We're going with Roscoe 12. And I hated it, and it was perfect.
Yeah.
My favorite color, though, is Roscoe 339. It's called Broadway Pink. And for me, it's like the perfect color for lighting.
Yeah.
Everything looks good in it. People, costumes, sets, everything looks good in Broadway Pink.
All right. You know what? We've had a great time, but I still want to get to one other thing.
Yes.
You have done something very unique that... Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever ridden that many miles on a bicycle in my entire life.
Yes. So last summer.
You went across the country.
Across the continent.
Oh, true. Yeah.
So yes, we went from, so the trip was from Washington State. So Forks, Washington, famous of Twilight fame. It's where Twilight takes place. The town has kind of lost its mind over Stephanie Meyer. Forks, Washington to Rye, New Hampshire. People are like, Hawaii. So back up, summer 2017, I had a fall and I broke my leg. And as part of that recovery process, I decided to do things a little differently. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try to say yes to things that are scary. And you know what is scary to me? Athletics. Sports. All these things that have
training
like, oh, this is terrible. So I signed up to do a triathlon training course.
Wow.
Through Sanford, because I was like, say yes to things that are scary. Say yes to things that are scary. That was very scary. And I get to this course and I'm the only newbie there. The only one. Everybody else is doing Ironmans, half Ironmans, local. They've been doing this for years. And I'm like, hi. And I realized very quickly that I'm not making this up. My $20 bike that I bought at a farm auction in the rain was not going to cut it.
Mm-hmm.
We grew up riding bikes. My family, that was our Sunday afternoons, was throw the bikes in the back of the pickup, drive somewhere, and go for a short ride. We'd ride, you know, 4-ish miles, and that was a Sunday afternoon. It was great. So to go from that to this, I discovered bike riding. I was like, oh, I like this. I'm good at this. And I remember the first time I went all the way around the trail in Sioux Falls. It's approximately 20 miles. It took me like over 2 hours. And I came back to my triathlon coach and I was like, oh, I did it. It took me like 2.5 hours. And she looked at me and was a little bit like, oh, that's nice. Keep going. So I always try to be the cheerleader for everybody else. But I just kept writing more and more and more. And then I found adventuring. I met some friends and they're like, hey, let's go on a bikepacking adventure. What's bikepacking, you ask? Well, it's like backpacking, but with a bike, where you carry everything with you on the bike that you might need. So you've got your tent, your sleeping bag, maybe a change of clothes, some tools, and it all comes with you on the bike. And that was 2019 was my first adventure. We rode from Peoria, Illinois to Madison, Wisconsin and back again. And I had a great time. And they were like, well, in 4 years, we're going to go across the country. You interested? I'm like, I'm in. I don't know what I just signed up for. So I spent 4 years. In 4 years, we're going across the country. In 3 years, we're going in two, in one, in next summer. And then it's like, you blink and I'm on a plane headed to Seattle. Okay. So it was just kind of this crazy adventure where beforehand, it just seemed so big. North America is a big place. And as I'm doing it, like every day, I'm trying as hard as I can to be present, to pay attention, to notice things. I have 1,000 pictures on my phone, it seems. And I look back through them and go, did I do that? Because like coming back, it's still seems so big. to stand on one on the West Coast in the Pacific Ocean and face east and go somewhere over there is another ocean. And we were riding, averaging probably about 70 miles a day. So think of that. Like, you're driving down the interstate, 1 hour in your car was
what you covered a bike.
It was my whole day.
Yeah.
So yes, I saw North America at approximately 10 to 12 miles an hour. So yeah, we went from Washington, Idaho, Montana, North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, crossed into Ontario, back at Niagara Falls, so New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, and ended at the ocean in Rye, New Hampshire. And then you stand in the Atlantic and face the west and look, and somewhere in your head, you're like, somewhere over there is another ocean. And it's like this moment of, this is incredible, but also a little sad.
Yeah.
Because you're like, okay, well, now what?
Yeah.
I had spent 4 years
preparing
yeah. and just like riding a little bit more every year, a little bit more. Because I remember when I finished my first 100 miles, not 100 miles at once,
mm-hmm.
but I had ridden 100 miles total. And it pops up in my Facebook feed every year. I remember how proud I was of that moment to reach 100 miles. To go from that to literally riding across a continent, and I hit 5,000 miles just last year, just over the year. I think my total odometer is over 15 at this point, which you start to think of that in terms of vehicles. And like, what's 15,000 miles in a car?
Three oil changes,
yeah. Exactly. So you'd start like somehow, I don't know how it happened, but I've reached that scale of like, I've lost my mind. And then I remember when I started, I was like, why on earth would anyone need more than one bike? It's just a bike. Why do you need more than one? And here I am now, and I have four.
See, I refer to that as GAS. Gear Acquisition Syndrome.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sure that in the tech world, you have a lot of that, just like I do here in the little studio that
yes,
I have.
Yes. I'm like, I want. And I'm kind of interesting here in town where I don't have a lot of gear.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the gear that I work on is owned by
the venue. Yeah.
The venue. So I get to play with different equipment, different boards, different this all the time.
And back to Google.
Like, how do I, what about? And that's one of the things that's really exciting about the creative world is I think there's a lot of willingness to share.
True.
Like,
very much so.
I thought of this fun idea. Oh, hey, I got this. And you just kind of like pass ideas around. And new techniques and new ideas. And that's what I was saying earlier about watching and taking ideas and discovering and trying new things and doing cool stuff. And then it's somewhere in your head, you always have to remember, like, I'm spending months and hours on this production, all for the audience to come in for 2 hours and go, that was nice.
Yeah.
And then go home and you're like, well... Okay.
That's awesome. All right. As a first-time guest, you get to answer the proverbial two questions. How you answer question number one may determine upon how you answer question number two, if you answer it or need to. And I have the feeling you've kind of already answered that part. But let's start off with, when you are not part of the arts and entertainment scene, what do you like to be entertained by?
So I have many creative hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
I am all over the place. Sometimes I feel like I am a little bit of a grandma character where it's like I have my garden in the summer. I do quilting projects. I listen to a lot of audiobooks as I'm doing other projects. I always say, I have said for years, I'm a farm kid. The sun's still up. I got to be doing something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I feel like if I sit down and watch movies, I fall asleep. it's nap time. It's a 2 hour nap time. I'll make it about 10 minutes. It doesn't seem to matter how long the movie is.
Or what the movie is.
Or what the movie is. About 10 minutes in, I'm out. And about 10 minutes before the end, I magically wake up again. So I'm always doing things. I watch, listen to YouTube videos as I'm doing other projects. And then I ride my bike.
Yeah.
The sewing takes me through the winter. And then it gets nice outside and I get itchy and I'm like, I want to go for a ride. I want to go see new places. I use a little app that tells me every time I go somewhere new. That's how I know there's approximately 1,000 miles of roads in Sioux Falls. I've only ridden about half of them at this point. So that means there's a whole nother half of Sioux Falls for me to go explore.
True. Well, explore locally. See, you don't need to answer the second question, which is always, any other hobbies? You pretty well went through.
I find especially creatives, crafts, creating, that is where my head just goes, oh, this is interesting. Yeah. And art and creativity, I love going and seeing shows, whether like concerts, theater shows, visual arts. I always love craft or creativity projects, or when I can see craft in them. This may make more sense with like visual arts, is you might not always understand it or get it, but
I feel something.
I can see the craft in it. Mm-hmm. I can see the skill and the care. And that is something I really, really enjoy, is when it look, because when you can see that there was a human touch to this. I was just saying this the other day with like the rise of AI and now AI and visual mediums, especially digital mediums. And like now AI music is coming on around. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I still like love the human touch. And for me, I said, theater is still real. Theater to me is kind of magic. There's no take two.
Right.
There's no, oh, pause, rewind, oh, let's tweak, let's say, let's do. It's real, it's now. And it's constant problem solving because it's real. So things don't always go perfect. And then it's like, okay, now what?
Yeah. All righty. Matt Cook, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show. Great to get to know you a little bit more and look forward to more great things in the lighting world now that I can think of it as the water. Mm-hmm. In a fish tank. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dave.
And we'll be back with more of the Dave Holly Hour in just a moment.
Comedy magician and hypnotist Jesse Moffitt's right. He can't play the piano, but he can sure entertain crowds with his amazing magic and clever quips. His shows always make the participants the stars, especially when they've fallen asleep on stage. They've been hypnotized. Are you the party planner in your group? Then you owe it to your group to make the event magical, even if it puts you to sleep. Here's how.
For booking information, go to Jesse Moffitt Entertainment on Facebook. That's JESSEMOFFITT. Or call 605-929-0964.
Check out the new ceramic studio in Sioux Falls. Conveniently located off Kiwanis Avenue on 5th Street. TJS Ceramics, inside Oscar's Mini Storage. Bisque, studio time, painting parties, and finished items are available. Visit TJS Ceramic Studio in Sioux Falls today.
Funny. Engaging. Connected. He's the entertainment reporter for Sioux Falls. Here's Dave Holly.
Welcome back, everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say this at the beginning of all the conversations. It's always a pleasure to talk Sioux Empire Arts and Entertainment. And those of you that are longtime listeners know that there's a lot of other things that we talk about, you know, such as collaboration, not competition. And you also know that I love when we expand the arts. And it has gone through such an explosion. You know, a few years back, we didn't have small theater groups. We had community theaters. We had our collegiate theaters. But then, all of a sudden, some little things come along, like Goodnight Theater and Monstrous Little Theater. And we're here to talk Monstrous Little Theater with actor Emily Wilson.
Hello.
Who has been on this show many times.
Yep.
And I have the feeling you're probably, because of our association with a particular show,
yes.
that might, you know, eventually put you in the lead. But first time,
first
Jeff
time.
Larson, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I mean, I'd been thinking about it for quite a while, and then all of a sudden, you end up being the director of this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys need to speak quickly because you're on the way to rehearsal.
We're on the clock.
Yes.
All right. So, Jeff, first of all, tell us about the show itself that we're doing.
Yeah. Love and Information by Carol Churchill is a series of vignettes that describe what it is like to be alive in the world that we live in now. And so it often looks at nostalgia, and it often looks at technology and looking at how our lives have changed, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse, and really trying to investigate what it means to live in an ever-changing world and how do we adapt and mm-hmm. how have we lost touch with people that the connections that we forge in life are shifting and they're changing with the advent of technology and social media. And so it's tackling a lot of those really difficult and extremely heavy ideas of how can we recapture a part of our lives? Or if we can't, how do we make peace with that? And so it's a really a heavy content while also being very fun and engaging. And we're having a lot of fun in rehearsal, even though we're also trying to solve all the world's problems all at once.
Well, I know that has been one of the themes, not trying to solve all the world's problems, but
yeah.
One of the things with Debbie and the direction that she's always wanted for Monstrous is to be able to tackle things,
mm-hmm.
not just, you know, have your great entertainment, the fun, hey, boy, that sure was great, but to come out of there going, boy, that was great. That really hit the nail on the head, didn't it? And so it's good to see that we do have these places now, you know, because you guys are going to be over at White Walls for the show. Coming up next Thursday,
that's right.
Friday, Saturday, 25th through the 27th of April.
That's right.
Showtimes are what?
7:30.
Okay. Yeah. And so I did hear from a little bird. I think she's sitting next to you.
Oh, there she is. Look at that bird.
I think this is a big bird.
Well, he is blonde.
Yeah, that's right.
But I'm not tall enough. But whatever.
This was an interesting thing to get into because you could have had a cast of like two or you could have had a cast of like 25.
Yeah. Yeah. I a cast of two would have felt very daunting for those two actors, and a cast of 25 I felt would have been very limiting in scope for the actors. And so I felt that eight was a really solid number for this show because it allowed everybody to explore a variety of different ideas mm-hmm. and different scenes and working together with, I think you have a chance to work with everybody else in the show.
Yep.
And that's really special that we have the opportunity to create a true ensemble without feeling like it's too large in scope or that it's too small in scope. I think we found the right number.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And was that based? Well, first of all, you said you kind of had the number eight in mind, but was there some correlation to how many people auditioned as well?
I think I always had around eight in mind, and I was hoping, please let there be at least eight people and let those eight people be really, really good. And we luckily had so many more than eight mm-hmm. really talented people audition for the show. And so, you know, it's one of the hardest parts of directing a show is figuring out how to cast it. But once you have the people in the room, that's when the magic starts. And so 95% of the director's job is getting the cast list correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, being able to work with talented people for the first time or being able to work with really talented people. Once again, I've worked with Emily quite a few times mm-hmm. in the past. And so having the chance to build something new with these people and build an entirely unique experience that will never be had again is truly special.
Looking forward to this. I'm very intrigued by it. So Information, obviously, we know where that part of the title comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the love part and the combination of them, Em?
I'd say so many of the scenes are just these little moments through relationships. So the love comes through. It's not a blatant, here's love. But it's what is love and how do we love people in various relationships and those differences? Because it's not all romantic or platonic. Right. You know, it's parental love. It's friend love. It's compassionate love. It's sometimes realizing that the love that you had for someone is in the past and then moving into your future without who that person was to you. Mm. So there's just so many different ways that love resonates throughout this show and just the different ways that we love the people around us.
Do you play one particular character? Same character name throughout? Or how do you work this?
What's so cool about this is that we don't have characters. We don't have parts per se. Mm-hmm. We did a really creative casting process with this. Jeff cast us. We read the show and then we sat down. Which scene speaks to you? Which part resonates with who you are, experiences you had, or what are you drawn to? Which ones do you like? And so we cast ourselves in a sense.
I would say. So the script itself is really quite unique in that when you're flipping through the pages of any other script, you see, I'm going to use A Doll's House because
this is your favorite.
It's the script that I keep calling back to. And I adore that show, but I, for some reason, keep calling back to it, that you look through the pages and it will say Nora and then it will have the line and then it will say Torvald and it will have the line. In this show, there are no character tags. There are no named characters. And there's no delineation of who says what. It's just a block of text.
So
it was our job in the process to decide who says what line, and are there times where lines are grouped together? Are there lines where lines are separated apart? And it was really, I think it was a fun challenge for everybody. Mm-hmm. I think it was a new experience for most people working with a show like this.
Yeah.
Are there any parts where, you know, especially in relationships then, where one will start a sentence and the other finishes?
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of interrupting. Yeah, which kind of gets to that idea of how do we build better connections?
And listening and making sure you're hearing what the other person is telling you and seeing where they're coming from instead of just like, yeah, whatever. I'm just walking. Okay, fine. You know, how do we communicate where maybe perhaps the communication has been dropped? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Are you off book already?
Mostly. No, I am. There's just, which is funny, this scene is called Memory House. That's the one I'm
the one
like.
You're having a tough time with.
Yeah. But it's very, what's also very interesting about the dialogue in the show, it's not complete thoughts. It is like, here are 3-4 words, boom, done. Here are 3-4 words. So it's not like, here I have this block of text. I do have one block of text where that's that. But usually you get complete sentences, complete thoughts with your scripts. This, you do not get that.
Okay.
You're memorizing like true conversation, chunks of conversation where the people are like, I don't have to finish my sentence. You know what I'm talking about. So we're just going to pop in between because we have this established form of communication with each other. So that's what's really hard. And then in the Memory House, like there's just like, it doesn't have a flow or a rhythm. It's a pattern of remembering things. And then like the flow of memorizing things triggers a memory, which triggers this, which is all these different things. So it's kind of, and then you loop around. So it's just this funky pattern because a lot of times you can get into a rhythm of understanding your script, your scene, where things are going. So it's much easier. You get this pattern and this does not follow that. So it's been a very tricky memorization process because it's so different.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And part of that too, and it's difficult to ascribe a specific intention to the playwright, but it feels certainly to me that part of this show is about the deconstruction of human connection, especially, like we said, with the advent of technology. And so we see where we once had full thoughts that had proper punctuation and had a very theatrical back and forth in that I say something and now you say something and I respond to what you said. Instead, there's a total breakdown of communication, and sometimes we don't know how to communicate within ourselves or with others. And that deconstruction, both in terms of the way it's written and also in the way that it's performed, is really something that is very intangible to describe, but also you'll feel it when you watch the show. You'll feel that these characters are yearning for a connection that they don't know how to achieve.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is you can actually communicate without emojis?
Well, that's what we're going to try. We should. That's a good idea.
Yeah, we do need some emojis.
Yeah. What are some emojis that work for the show?
LOL, laughy faces.
Yeah.
Angry faces, angry sad faces.
Heart eyes emoji.
The heart eyes, yes. Broken heart.
Broken heart, the crying emoji.
Crying emoji.
Yeah.
Oh. The one scene with
See,
Tom
here
and
comes
Nancy.
The informational
Broken
part
heart.
Coming right back.
Yeah, I know,
yeah.
And
chicken emoji.
Oh, a chicken emoji. You'll have to find out what that means.
Yes. A snail emoji.
The show is called Love and Information, and the Carol Churchill, who is herself one of the most prominent playwrights of the 20th and 21st century, has in this very granular moment of time boiled down what it means to be a citizen of the world into two parties, right? Mm-hmm. You have love and you have information, and that is fact and feeling, right? That dichotomy, and how do you square the two together, and really digging into what it means to build information, to gather information, to share information. Feels the same a lot of the time that you're building a love or you're sharing a love or you're yearning for love. And so that idea of these two contrasting things that also swirl together, mm-hmm. very, very compelling.
Was it easy to just let the cast go on this? Or were you like, yeah, okay, you
Jeff
can try
made
that.
Jeff has a very collaborative process.
Yeah.
Because the whole time he's like, no, this is your show. This is our show. This, what we're doing will never be done again. This will mm-hmm. not be, as Jeff says, a dollhouse where you have one person who plays Nora and the story will be told as is because this is the point that we are conveying. The interpretation of this is left up to who we are as performers, directors, people, and our experiences and how they're interpreting it based on what's going on in our lives, what's happening in the world around us, what's currently influencing us. So how we interpret this will never be done again the same way. So he's left a lot of that to us with some gentle guidance and referrals to lots of movies, especially Ocean's 11.
It's a great movie.
Yes, so, it is. So it's been a really great collaborative process because Jeff is very brilliant over here and smart and everything and letting us and guiding us in making sure like we're properly understanding the text, but also then properly conveying it so the audience, because it is going to be a lot of information thrown at the audience. So we have to make sure we're very clear in what we're presenting. Okay. So that way they're going to interpret it as they will, but the interpretation, the information that they're taking in is going to be fast and furious. So it has to be very clear. So he's been very great about leading us in that direction.
You being a champion of improv,
mm-hmm.
was it easier to do this with the improv skills that you have?
I think trying different things, approaching it differently, those improv skills are like, well, let me think of it this way or let me approach something this way, you know, rather than like, hey, I'm going to just do what you're telling me all the time. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And I will say from an outside perspective that improv is an art form built around choice and built around making choices and quick choices. But theater is an art form that's built around the ability to revise and repeat, right? That you can take a choice and work with it and play with it, mold it. And if it doesn't work, you can try something else. And ultimately, every time you make a choice, you are destroying any other possibility that could have gone in that place. Mm-hmm. But the beautiful thing about blending the two forms is that while you do disregard the other possibilities by making one choice in the moment, you can go back and you can say, well, that worked here, but it didn't work here. So you can build a world that feels correct to us. And something that you said earlier really struck me, that while we are trying to put our own lives and our own experiences into the show, we are also very understanding that the audience is going to derive their own meaning from the show, which means that there will be conflicting informations in the room during a scene. And that's, I think, part of the beauty of the show is that it's so difficult to nail down that I think we've tried we've stopped trying to make the definitive choice because we know that this is the choice that works for us.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the show change nightly in rehearsals?
Sometimes it does, yeah, and I welcome that. There will come a time where I say, all right, we have to know what we're going to do. But
you're also leaving certain moments to let us just kind of play with as we go. Just know, like, we're going to play with this here, react appropriately. So.
Yeah, yeah. I always believe that, and especially in a production like this, so long as everybody is treating each other with respect and with their proper boundaries, which they all are because they're all fantastic people and very talented people that really love and care for each other and have that immense respect every time they walk into the room. But so long as they are respecting those boundaries, everything's on the table. As long as we're doing the scene that works for us. And so if something comes up where we say, oh, you know what? It's not working for these characters to be lovers anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're a mother-daughter relationship now. We can try that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the show is Love and Information coming up next Thursday through Saturday, April 25th through the 27th at Whitewall Sessions. Which is a Last Stop CD shop down in the basement. A great, fun little spot. In fact, saw you in a play there once.
That's right.
Showtime again?
7:30 p.m.
And how about getting tickets?
Yeah, you can visit our website or you can go to our social media page. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. And you can, I'll pull up our...
Well, while you're pulling that up, make sure that you think of this because, you know, as a first-time guest, you are required to answer a couple of ending questions.
I'm excited. Yeah. I'll tell you that, very importantly, the website is monstrouslittletheater.com.
All right. Very well, then. So, when you're not part of the arts and entertainment scene, what do you like to be entertained by?
Oh, God. So I love movies so much, as Emily has already expressed. I really do love movies, and I'm a huge movie buff, but I'm also a huge awards season buff, so I love the Oscars. I'm always into the biggest movies of the year. I love those, and of course the blockbusters. I'm also a huge sports fan, and I hate to sow divisions between us already, but I know you're a Cubs fan,
yeah,
and I'm a huge Cardinals fan. Ooh. I know. I know.
As soon as you said division.
I know. Oh. Yeah. I'll pull the dagger out of your back.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I
notice in your studio you have, and I don't know if it's the color palette or not, but I notice you have a Denver Broncos.
Yes.
I'm a huge Denver Broncos fan.
All right. Redemption. You got it.
Absolutely. So hopefully this can still be a blossoming friendship.
It will be.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So I love movies. I love sports. I love reading novels, plays. So it's tricky, you know, when I'm not in the arts, I love to be consuming arts. It's impossible to escape. And that's why we need to, as a society, value artists and I think pay them for their labor.
Yes, I agree. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much, Jeff Larson, first-time guest. Emily Wilson, many-time guest. And looking forward to Monstrous Little Theater show next week. Appreciate you taking time to be on the Dave Polly Hour.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Ladies, when it's time to give your nails some love, get that extra special treatment from Quality Nails on South Minnesota Avenue in Sioux Falls. Manicures and pedicures that look great and make you feel fantastic. Zaya and Tony provide professional care for your hands and feet, whether you just want the basics or an extra special look with added flair. Oh, and guys, it's okay to treat yourself too. Quality nails. Call for an appointment. 605-334-1463.
Dr. Perry Langston and Dr. Corey Tooney know excellence is in you. That's why they provide you with excellent care at Exo Chiropractic, improving your overall health in spirit, body, mind, and will. Get results the natural way. Arrange a consultation. 605-332-9235 or exokairos.com. Excellent care for excellent people. XL Chiropractic, located at 4309 South Racket Drive in Sioux Falls.
People ask him where he got his top shelf voice. Dime store? Bargain. Once again, here's Dave Holly.
Thanks again to my great guests, Matt Cook and Jeff Larson and Emily Wilson. As always, the biggest thank you goes to each of you for listening, downloading, sharing, following. Don't forget to follow Dave Holly Hour on Facebook and Instagram. For all 225 episodes, go online, DaveHollyHour.com. While you're on that site, use the search function. You can look up your favorite artist to see if they've been on the show before. You find that episode, you go back to it, listen anytime. In fact, you can listen to all 225 if you'd like. It would be greatly appreciated. As the Sioux Falls Arts Council says, together we art. As Arts South Dakota says, home is where the art is. As I say, put some art in your heart. Remember, I'm Dave Holly, and for me, every day is a holiday.
The Dave Holly Hour has been brought to you by TJS Ceramic Studio, Serendipity Studio Gallery and Gifts, Chasers Food and Spirits, XL Chiropractic, Quality Nails, Jesse Moffitt Entertainment, and the Sioux Falls Arts Council. If you would like to contribute to the continued success of this podcast, simply buy Dave a cup of coffee. Go to DaveHollyHour.com and click on the coffee cup icon. Don't forget to stay up to date on the show by following on Instagram and Facebook. The Dave Holly Hour is produced in the Dipsy Doodle Studios by Big D Entertainment.
Thanks for listening.